It's time to meet the street with me, David Plimpton.
Well, hello friends, and welcome back to this, another episode of my humble podcast. As you may be able to tell, I'm not at home today in my bedroom studio. I'm in fact in a taxi cab with good friend and today's interviewee, Carl Alonzi. Now, Carl is a taxi driver who...
Are you doing it now?
Yep, Carl, I'm doing it now. So you just keep driving. Let me just carry on here. Where was I? Carl Alonzi is a taxi driver with an astounding story to tell. And over the next half hour or so, you'll journey into the world of one of the most interesting...
When are we doing the interview?
Yep, we've already done the interview, Carl. This is just a novel way of introducing it. And also, I wanted to take advantage of the 30% discount that you'd offered me. Where was I? Sorry. Yeah, Carl is one of the most interesting people I've met this year, and his story is astounding. So sit back.
Have we started?
Yep, Carl. No, we've started. Let me do the end of this, and then we can talk about the interview.
When are we doing it?
No, we've already done the interview, Carl, 2 weeks ago over Skype. Remember?
Yeah. Where are we going, David?
Just pull over here, Carl. I'll get out. I'll walk. Anyway, sit back, relax, enjoy the ride, and once again, let's meet the street. Carl Alonzi, taxi driver, man of many talents. Are you there? Can you hear me, Carl?
I can hear you, David, loud and clear. Clear as crystal, like it's almost like looking through a window, but with sound. I love it. Yeah, like I can hear you. I'm here live and direct, and I'm ready to go. I you know, thank you so much for asking me to get involved. I listen to your program when I'm in the car, all the episodes. You know, I heard that one with the bloke with a long finger, the kid what had the machine gun. All of them, I've heard them all, and I gotta say it's an honour for me to be joining the ranks of such highly esteemed people. So that's all I gotta say for now, because I can't think of nothing else to say at the moment.
I can only say thank you for agreeing to take part in this episode. Before we go any further, some of the listeners may be aware that you are indeed a taxi driver, but on top of that, you are unique in your field in that you're probably the most highly travelled taxi driver in the United Kingdom.
I don't like to brag about it, David, but yeah, I have managed to clock up a few miles in my days as a driver, and I've even actually kept a record of every mile I've driven since I started driving back in the day. And through my assistance of being number one in my field, I've covered more than 3.2 million miles in taxi journeys, which with hindsight, it does seem like an incredible waste of time jotting all those distances down in a big exercise book where you've labelled journeys. But at the same time, I've got to say that's what's furnished me with an enormous sense of achievement, David. And you can't get that from nowhere else apart from the freedom of the open road, David.
And that open road has certainly had its share of twists and turns. But before we look at this rich and illustrious career of yours, let's start at the beginning. What was it about driving a taxi that's so very special to you?
Well, that all started, David, really, when I was a child, a very small child. Going back in the day, like I actually started driving a car when I was 3 years old, if you can imagine. And that was all down to my father, God bless him. He's no longer with us. Something terrible happened to him, which I won't go into at the moment. But as you could tell by my accent, I'm from South Wales, Newport. And that's where I grew up, born and bred. And it was fucking wicked. Like, you know, I loved it there, and I had a fucking great time. And my father, as a child, introduced me to driving through his love of drinking. Now, the love affair really began in the car park of the Friendship Pub in Ringland. I don't know if you've ever been there or not, but it's, well, it's not there anymore. It's burnt down, like, but when it was there, like, it was fucking wicked. And as a kid, my father used to drive us all to the Friendship on a Friday, me and all my brothers and sisters, and we'd go there and he'd go in drinking. And of course, one of us being kids, we weren't allowed inside. So we'd spend many happy hours outside in the car park, you know, picking up cigarette ends and re-rolling them and smoking them, or, you know, just setting fire to cats and that kind of thing. And we loved it. You know, my father was happy enough to give us a bit of Pepsi and crisps and all that. And it was great. But of course, these Friday night visits would stretch out. And sometimes he'd be there for up to 3 days at a time. He'd go in on Friday and he'd come back out on Monday morning, you know. And during this whole time, we would all be waiting in the car, just sitting around. And, you know, there's only so many cigarettes you can re-smoke off the car park floor. So, well, I started taking an interest in the interior of the car. You know, I'd look at the steering wheel and I put my hands on the pedals and wiggle the gear stick and all that. And I realised very quickly there was operating a car is a very simple process. And within a matter of weeks, I'd actually mastered the art of driving, David, which is an amazing thing for a three-year-old, you think about it. Not many three-year-olds can do anything these days other than look at an iPad and scream. But I was very different, and, you know, I got my bigger brother to do the pedals, and within weeks, like I said, I was going around the car park. And this locally, you know, this was astounding to my not just my father, but the people in the pub. But, you know, they was all really impressed, and it worked out that within 6 months, I was not only driving around the car park at a moderate speed, I mastered things like wheelies, side wheelies, front wheelies, all the wheelies, handbrake turns, anything you could see on Starsky and Hutch or any of those American TV shows, I was doing it in a car park. And of course, that led to me becoming a bit of a local celebrity, if you can imagine it. A three-year-old what can drive a car and do wheelies, side wheelies, front wheelies, all the wheelies, and handbrake turns. I got a lot of recognition in my hometown of Newport. And, you know, I made it to the papers. I really was a bit of a hit. And that's really what drove me to fall in love with the idea of driving. I just thought, this is for me, mate. And I haven't looked back since. Like, you know, I just keep on going. It's amazing. Well, you certainly did keep on going, because as your book, Busy Tonight Drive, out at the moment says, you schooled yourself in driving and felt no need for any other form of education. You hardly went to school. In fact, you were thrown out because of your love of taxi driving. Oh yeah, like, you know, there's no doubt in my mind the school was not for me, David. Like I said, 3 years old, driving a car, what use is putting a load of stickle bricks together or building something from sand? You don't need that when you got the ability to drive a car. And I felt this way from day one. And like I said, I barely went to preschool, or nursery as we called it then. Primary school was, I reckon, I went about four times. Did some colouring in, and then just walked out. What's the point? I drove home, you know. And eventually I was told by the authorities I had to go to secondary school. So I tried to break this romance I had with my father's car. And I did my best to actually attend secondary school. And for a while I fitted in. I made friends, you know, and I did all the things they asked of me. I turned up, had my sandwiches, all that. I wasn't taking the car into the school. I was doing like they said, but I wasn't happy. You know, I was making a good living on the side, just sort of driving other kids around the streets, doing the side wheelies, the front wheelies, all the wheelies. And I wasn't fitting in school, but the love of wanting to drive a taxi, it wouldn't go away, David, and I was eventually thrown out because I adapted my I adapted my obsession with driving for the school environment. And what I was doing was I was giving people piggybacks between classrooms for a small fee. And in my mind, that was perfectly natural. I was perfectly fine. It was okay. But the teachers threw me out when they discovered that I'd actually amassed a small fortune of £640 just for giving piggybacks between classrooms to the other kids. It was just in my blood, David, and I could not say no to somebody who asked me for a lift, you know. Cal the Lift, they used to call me. And that name, that stuck, you know, for many years now. It wasn't for me. School was not for me, and I couldn't change that. And looking back, I don't think I made the wrong decision, you know. I don't think I made the wrong decision. Although I can't spell or count. You persisted with your love for the car, and in 1982, you reached the legal driving age. You took your driving test and you passed. And this really opened up a whole new world for you. But something life-changing happened the same day you got your driving test, Carl. Yeah, looking back, that day in 1982 was probably both a blessing and a curse, because two life-changing events happened. If you could imagine this, I was 16 years old. The whole world was in front of me. And I was excited to be able to get a proper driving license and actually enter the world of taxidom, or taxidermy, as we call it in the trade. But it's not easy to say this, David, but the day I got my driving license was also the same day I lost my entire family, which was heartbreaking. David, what it was, if you can picture this, I was 16 years old, and my family was all excited, and you know, they were the ones that got me the driving test for my birthday. There was no need for lessons. They just said, "Here you go. We booked you in for a driving test. Go off, get your license. You know, enjoy it." You know, and I remember I got up that morning, I thanked them for it, I said, "This is great." And as I left the house, they said, "Have a good time, son. We're going off up Penskinner Wildlife Park for the day." I'll never forget, I said, "I'll have a good time. Don't forget to feed the penguins." And my father laughed, he said, "Fuck off, I don't like penguins. I'm going to see the fucking giraffes." And he loved giraffes and all that, you know. So that was the last time I saw him, and I went off, did my driving test, and I passed immediately, you know. Over the moon I was, so excited. I headed home to tell my family, and of course when I got back there was a police officer there. Sorry. There was a police officer there, and he said, Are you Carl Alonzi?" I said, "Yeah." He said, Have your family been up Penskinner Wildlife Park today on a day trip?" I said, "Yes." He said, you better come in, son. I think you need to put a kettle on." And what he told me, it broke my heart, David. My father drove a red Vauxhall Viva. And that's why they went up to Penskinner Wildlife Park in. All the family, both my brothers and my sister and my mother and father, they drove up there all excited. They had a packed lunch, they had a camera to take photos, they had everything. They was all highly excited, and they got up there, and by all accounts, they saw the seals. They went on the Alpine slide run thing. They went in a gift shop, they had it all. And at the end of the day, they decided to go and see the elephants. Which is that's no problem. A lot of people have been to see the elephants. People have been to see elephants around the world, whether it's in a zoo in the UK or in Thailand. People have been seeing elephants for years. But the difference here was my family drove into the elephant enclosure, and of course the car they were driving, the Vauxhall Viva, was red. And what a lot of people don't realise is the colour red to an elephant is very much like the colour red to a bull, apart from one difference. If you shows the colour red to a bull, it makes it angry. We all know that. We've seen the cartoons, we've seen the films, it's just common knowledge. But if you shows the if you shows the colour red to an elephant, it makes it incredibly hungry, David. And what with them driving a car in, it was the end of the day. The elephants have probably been very busy having people watch them. They were very tired. The main elephant, the leader, the bull elephant, it was an African elephant, became incredibly hungered at seeing this red Vauxhall Viva. And by all accounts, the family were watching them. They were surrounded by a herd of elephants who mistook them for what I can only say in the eyes of an elephant would have been the equivalent to a tin of beans to a human. And they proceeded to rip the roof off of the car and suck the entire family up through their trunks. Shoes and all, everything just gone. A herd of elephants ate my entire family. And that was it. That was it, David. I was gutted. The policeman, like I said, he sat me down. He said, you know, this is it, son. You've got to stand on your own 2 feet now. At least you've got a driving licence. Which in some ways he was right. I did have a driving licence and my family had been eaten by elephants. So he was right. It's incredibly brave of you to be able to speak so openly about this terrible event. It must have been a terrible time in your life. There you are, this 16-year-old boy, left with nothing but a driving licence and a small inheritance from your family. What was the next move? Well, I was racked with guilt, David, because I know for a fact if I'd been driving that day, I might have been able to save my own family, you know. I was very good. I always have been at reversing. And if I wake up sometimes in the middle of the night thinking if I'd been driving, maybe I could have reversed away from the elephants and that, you know, they might have ripped the roof off, but they wouldn't have sucked up my entire family through their trunks. And I'll never know if that's real or true or not because I wasn't there to do it. But with this inheritance, I sat there and I thought to myself, well, I can either give up now and just let myself rot away, or I can do something about this. So I took the inheritance I'd received from my family, and I started up my own mobile taxi firm. I bought an Austin Allegro estate. An Austin Allegro estate is an incredibly reliable car, and I think that if my family was to be eaten by elephants, I think an Austin Allegro estate would probably help me get through the severe depression you would suffer very quickly. And for 6 years, this was your life, helping you keep your mind off of the tragedy. You were a professional taxi driver. And life didn't seem so bad after all. Well, exactly, David. I mean, this time in my life was that I really mastered the art of taxi driving, or as I mentioned earlier, as we professionals call it, taxidermy. I learned the lingo. I learned about the psychology. I became more than a taxi driver. I realised that when you get a passenger in your car, you're like a psychiatrist. You're like a carer. You're like a sports pundit or a geography teacher, all rolled into one. Like, and I loved that. You know, I thought this is my true calling. You know, I might not have a family as such because obviously mine had been eaten by an elephant, but these people getting in my car have become like my family, you know. Whether you was getting in for a quick trip to the garage for fags or you was going to Cardiff Airport on holidays, that time you was in my car, I was going to be like a father to you, no matter what or who you was, you know. Whether you was black, white, Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, Rastafarian, Seventh-day Adventist, Wesleyan, I was there for you, you know, and I was happy with that, you know. That was my world, David, and if it had stayed like that, I would have been happy as Larry, mate. You know, I was a lucky man. But then something happened that completely changed the whole dynamic of my taxi driving. And all I can say is it took it up a notch, David. It was amazing. Well, I mean, it certainly was. I mean, your book, page 12 of your book, Busy Tonight Drive, currently available at the moment, goes into some depth of this moment where your life completely turned around. I think now would be a good time to hear an excerpt from your audiobook. Yeah, get it on, mate. It's like I said, it's available in the shops now. It's on. You can get it on tape, and you can buy a paperback. There's even a hardback version. Yeah, by all means. I think this is probably one of my favourite parts of the book, actually. So, yeah. July 26, 1988, and times were hard for the people of Newport and the surrounding areas. Thatcher had put the kibosh on all the coal mines 3 years previous. Unemployment in the valleys was at an all-time high, and to make matters worse, the slide had been closed in Newport Leisure Centre because vandals had put a razor blade on it in an attempt to intimidate the swimming community. To be honest, the people of Newport and the surrounding areas needed a good laugh, and today they was going to have it. Proper mind. Because international pop star Michael Jackson was coming to town. By town, I actually mean Cardiff, which was, and still is, 12 miles down the road. Jackson was on a whistle-stop tour of the UK, and his live show was going down a treat. But with tickets in excess of 16 quid, it weren't easy to get in, let me tell you. So, sadly, while with being so busy with my taxi driving and all, I missed the chance of actually getting a ticket. Even though I'd previously on the Saturday beforehand tried in Our Price, Diverse and Roxine in the in-shops. But I weren't sad, because even though I couldn't get into the Cardiff Arms Park to see my musical hero in real life, I knew I could make a killing on the taxi run that night. And besides, just seeing the smiles on all those lucky people's faces was more than enough for me. My shift started earlier than usual that day, and I was ferrying all the port heads over to the diff in their droves. All excited and wearing their Michael Jackson t-shirts and all, the atmosphere was proper, like cutting the butter with knife. The punters was all good as gold as well, and most of them unable to hide the excitement at seeing the King of Pop live that night. "Busy Tonight Drive," they would say from behind their beaming smiles. "Not bad, like," I would reply, underplaying the fact that I'd already done over 30 runs to Diff and back and was harbouring over a grand in cash in between my legs in my money bag. By 7:30, they was all in, and Michael was ready to wow the audience with his dazzling costumes, powerful singing voice, and of course, that dance move he does while looks like his leg is nailed to the floor and he leans really far forward, but he don't fall over. As I said earlier, the atmosphere was proper. For the next few hours, I sat contentedly outside of the stadium, listening with much glee, as Michael wowed the audience with all his hits, Thriller, Bad, and my favourite, Librarian Girl. Hit after hit drifted up out of the walls of the stadium and filled the streets with magic. At the end of the concert, Michael said goodnight to the crowd and the air was filled with thunderous applause. The fans streamed out of the venue, and apart from one or two pissheads giving me grief for refusing them a lift, the whole night was epic as fuck. One fan was so made up, he gave me his Michael Jackson scarf after I told him I was a bit gutted I couldn't get in, like. Really nice. Overall, it was a brilliant night, and with over £2,000 in my pocket, I was made up. But just as I got back to the port, and with time for a quick pint in a Talisman before going home, my CB radio crackled into life. It was Dina, my now wife, but at the time just my radio operator, and bloody good at it she was and all.
"Just got a call for another pickup in the diff, Cal," she said informatively. "You got time for the final run, Dal?"
"It'll be double time now, mind," I said, hoping the customer would sack it off and walk a 12 miles home instead.
"He's offering triple, mate," said Dina informatively again.
"Happy days," I replied, and got the car back on the A48 and smashed it over the M4 and back into the diff. On my return, it was as if Michael Jackson had never even been there. The streets was quiet as fuck, and there was no sign of the smiling hordes what had been there just hours before. Not even the cleaners was there, and for a bit, I thought this was all a wind-up. Then suddenly, from the side of the stadium, a door opened, and out came what must have been the last person left in Cardiff Arms Park that night. From out of the shadows, I seen this figure emerge, and I instantly recognised him. It was none other than Michael Jackson himself. I was stunned and amazed at the same time. Hiya, mate. Can you give me a lift to Savas Nightclub up, Usk? Jackson asked sheepishly. Still stunned and amazed, I managed to compose myself long enough to mouth the words, "Get in, son." That night was unlike any other I've experienced in my life. Not only did I take Michael Jackson, the undisputed king of pop, up to Savas Nightclub in Usk, he got me in on the guest list, treated me to a slap-up meal, and showed me a side of superstardom rarely seen by the likes of you and me. And from that moment on, our friendship was cemented, and right through until his dying day, we remained strong friends for many years. As for what went on in Savas Nightclub that night, well, that's another story. Michael Jackson. The beginning of an astounding career. From this point onwards, you went from a standard taxi driver, albeit one that had learned to drive at the age of 3, performing wheelies, side wheelies, front wheelies, all the wheelies.
All the wheelies, all of them, like, yeah.
To a chauffeur to the stars. And it was Michael that opened that door for you. Now, tell me, what was it like being friends with the, as you described, undisputed king of pop?
I gotta say, David, you cannot describe what it's like being best friends with Michael Jackson. You know, I've had friends before, you know. I've had friends all my life. John the Lock, Pete from Bailey's, Northern Andy, all of them are great people, you know. But there's nobody in the world like Michael Jackson. And that day that I gave him that lift, I just knew straight away. We just clicked. As soon as he got in the car, he was good as gold. He was. He put his seatbelt on. He didn't give me instructions as to where to go, as a lot of people do when they're passengers in your car. And he was just very, very polite. His dress sense was astounding. He always wore very beautiful clothing. His manners were delightful. And he was so generous, like I said in the book while you were there. You know, he got me in on the guest list to Savas Nightclub. He paid for a slap-up meal. And we just spent the whole night just hanging out, like, as if we'd known each other for years. And I really thought, you know, wow, that's amazing. This guy is fantastic. And when I took him back to Cardiff Airport to fly home the next day, he said goodbye. And I thought, you know what? What a top bloke. But he took my card. He got out the car and he said, "Do you know what, Joy? That's the best taxi journey I've ever had in my life." And I said, "Well, no problem, Michael. You know, you've made some of the best songs I've ever heard in my life. So let's call it quits, shall we, mate?" And he said, "I tell you what, I want to do something for you." He said, "What's your favourite car?" And I didn't even have to think about it. At the time, David, my favourite car, and it still is to this day, was a Peugeot 405, the one with the sunroof in white. I said that to him, not thinking much about it, and he agreed. He said, you know, he loves Peugeot cars. He had a 405 himself. And of course, you know, the conversation came to an end. I thanked him for a great night, and off he went. I got home. I told Dina, my radio operator, now my wife, as I mentioned. I told Dina, and she was all excited, and we thought, what a nice guy. And that night we listened to Michael Jackson's Off the Wall album, and we made love. And that was it. I thought, that's it, you know, that's basically a chapter in my life that I will close. The next morning, of course, I received a knock at the door, and it's a delivery driver. There's a flatbed truck outside the front of the house, and on top, wrapped in a giant pink bow, is a Peugeot 405 in white with a sunroof. The guy said, are you Carl Alonzi? I said, yeah. He said, "This is for you, mate, from Michael Jackson." I said, what? I took it down off the flatbed truck, and lo and behold, there's a card in there saying, you know, "To Carl, here's to many more years of taxi drives. I hope you enjoy the car. All the best, Michael Jackson." That night, I got a phone call from him. He put bubbles on his monkey. We had a chat,
I thanked him, and the relationship just lasted from there. And he would ring every Friday before I started my shift, obviously, and he would just catch up with me and tell me all about what had been going on in his world, you know. Michael himself was caught up in some controversy. Is the word, is it controversy or controversy? I think it could be controversy. I always thought it was controversy. Whatever, but whatever, yeah, like, yeah, you're right, he was. He was involved, and I got to say, of all the accusations made against Michael, I think he was innocent. I don't want to go any more into it than necessary here, but of all the time I spent with him, all the times I spoke to him on the phone, there was no mention of any of that, you know, that stuff. What they said, you know, I'd rather not talk about that, really. Although I will say, in my opinion, David, not that it counts, I think someone had a vendetta against him. You look back at how powerful he was. And you think of the other people within the industry who would have held something against him. Was somebody trying to frame him? You know, John Bon Jovi, Prince, even Joe Fagan from That's Living All Right. They were selling a lot of records in them days, but they could not take him off the number one spot. And I reckon, personally, it was someone of that ilk added in for him and started spreading rumours. There's no evidence to back that up, David, but I've just got a feeling. And that's all I want to say on the issue, is that possibly John Bon Jovi or Prince or even Joe Fagan had something to do with it, but I'd rather move on, please. Well, that's understandable, Carl. But the relationship with Michael Jackson led to you becoming a driver for not just one famous star, but for many others. His network of high-profile celebrities meant that every time an entertainer was visiting the UK or on tour in the UK, you would be the go-to man. And you met a cavalcade of stars through this in point that you had. Oh, yeah, I had them all in my car, mate. I had John Inman from Are You Being Served? I've had Gordon Kay from Hello Hello, who I know has been mentioned in this podcast of yours previously. Hall and Oates, both of them, they were lovely. Who else? I've had them all. I've had the drummer from Def Leppard with one arm. And he was a laugh, I tell you, because, of course, like, you know, we made a lot of references to changing gear, what with him having one arm and all. But anyway, yeah, I've had some really great times over the years, and I just want to say, if anyone out there is looking for a professional driver, things have been a bit quiet recently while we're locked down and all. I am available for hire, so get in touch. Indeed, I will. Carl Alonzi, thank you so much for taking part in today's interview. I can only say I am indebted to you for taking part, and thank you again so much for being involved in the podcast. And here's to many more happy years, free and easy on the highway we call life. So thank you, Carl Alonzi. Well, David, thank you so much for asking me on. I just want to say before I go, as a way of me thanking you for thanking me for getting involved on this podcast, so I just want to say, as a way of saying thank you, if you are looking for a taxi ride yourself, I would be willing to offer you a 30% discount on any journeys within a 1.5-mile radius of your own home within the next 2 weeks. So please, I'd like to offer you that special offer exclusively for you for taking part in asking me to take part in taking part in your podcast. So thank you, David. Well, Carl, that's incredibly kind of you. I really wasn't expecting any handouts here, but as a ways of saying thank you in return, all I can say is if you do have any recorded or audio material advertising your taxi firm, I'd be more than happy to play that out on air as a ways of saying thank you to you for offering me a 30% discount on any journeys within a 1 0.5 mile radius of my local area within the next 2 weeks. So that's my way of saying thank you to you for thanking me in that way. Well, David, that's incredibly kind of you. I mean, I would be more than willing to give you some of my advertising jingles and slogans and stuff, but I haven't got any. But if I did, and I made one that was going to go on a radio and all that, it would probably go something like this. Cal's Cars, if it's good enough for the King of Pop, it's good enough to take you to the shop. But it would have music and the telephone number of the company on it as well, which incidentally is 0774-673-993-4752-329-4743-22-192-874-6-1. Well, Carl, that's a snappy number, and I'm sure people will be jotting that down now as we speak. I can only say thank you again for taking part. And well, that's it. Thank you, Carl, and good night. It's done. Is it done? Yeah, that's done. We can wrap up now. Right, so do I turn it off, or is it you? Which one stops the? It's not like a taxi, this, because in a taxi, you clearly, when we stop, you can see where the stop is, and you get out. This is, I can't see where we are. We imagine, Carl, we're on the side of the road. Which road? By the leisure centre. Right, okay. And have we gone to the car park, or am I just dropping off on the double yellows at the front? The double yellows, Carl. You stop there. Okay. That's 350, please. No, Carl, I haven't really. This isn't real. Right, okay. I think I should just go. Okay, Carl, goodbye.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Meet the Street, remember to like and subscribe on iTunes or your favourite podcast provider. Follow me on Twitter at Plimpton David and join my Facebook page at Meet the Street One. And if you're really feeling generous, you can donate a small fee via ko-fi.com/meet-the-street. Every penny helps. Until next time, goodbye.
Jill, I've done it. You can use the spare room for the washing now.